So, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text number 1, to the beginning of the chapter. This chapter is called Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. So this is two verses in one, verse number 1 and verse number 2. Arjuna uvacha prakritim purusham chaiva kshetram kshetrajna eva cham etad vidutam icchami gyanam gyayam cha kesava Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam Sariram Kaunteya Kshatramija Vidiyate Etam Yo Veti Tam Prahu Kshetrajna Iti Tad Vidaha Arjuna Uvacha. Arjuna said, Prakritim, nature, Purusham, the enjoyer, Cha, also, Eva, certainly, Kshetram, the field, Kshetrajnam, the knower of the field, Eva, certainly, cha, also, etat, all this, veditum, to understand, icchami, I wish, gyanam, knowledge, gyayam, the object of knowledge, cha, also, Keshava, O Krishna, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Personality of Godhead said, Idam, this, Sarira, body, Kunteya, O son of Kunti, Kshetram, the field, Iti, thus, abhidiyate, is called, etat, this, ya, one who, veti, knows, tam, he, prahu, is called, kshetrajna, the knower of the field, Iti, thus, tad vidaha, by those who know this. So we have Arjuna speaking and then Krishna is also speaking. Arjuna said, O my dear Krishna, I wish to know about Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer, and the field and the knower of the field and the knowledge and the object of knowledge. So Arjuna is asking four questions. So what four questions is he asking? He's asking four questions. What are those four questions divided into two categories, nature and the enjoyer? He's asking, I wish to know about nature, the enjoyer, and the field, and the knower of the field, and the knowledge, and the object of knowledge. So Prakriti is the field, and the knower of the field is the living entity. And what is knowledge, and what is the goal of knowledge? So this chapter, you'll find begins what is called Jnana Yoga. Bhagavad Gita is mixed with three categories of knowledge: Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti is the thread or the continuous theme throughout Bhagavad Gita. But Krishna puts emphasis in the first six chapters on Karma Yoga. In the middle six chapters, he puts exclusive emphasis on Bhakti Yoga. And in the last six chapters, starting with this one, he speaks about Jnana Yoga. So within Bhakti, there is also Jnana, or within Jnana, there is also Bhakti. Same with Karma. But Bhakti is exclusive because it includes both Karma and Jnana automatically. But you'll find elements of Bhakti within Karma, and you'll find elements of Bhakti also within Jnana. And now Krishna's answering, he said, "This body, O son of Kunti, is called the field. And one who knows this body is called the knower of the field." So he's referring to the material body of the living entity. Okay, so we'll read some of the purport. Arjuna was inquisitive about nature, the enjoyer, the field, its knower, and the knowledge of the object, and the object of knowledge. When he inquired about all these, Krishna said that this body is called the field, and that one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. So this chapter is very philosophical. In fact, we might say it's the most philosophical chapter in the entire Bhagavad Gita. So the terminology has to be really studied carefully in order to understand what is being discussed here between Krishna and Arjuna. And it's about these topics which we just mentioned. Who is the enjoyer? What is the field? What is the knower of the field? Who's the knower of the field? What is knowledge and what is the goal of knowledge? All of this is going to be discussed in the up and coming verses. This body is the field of activity for the conditioned soul. So we jump around, we're the soul inside this body, and this is our field of activity, our material body. Okay? The conditioned soul is entrapped in this material existence, and he attempts to lord it over material name. So we're entrapped by this material body, but yet we're trying to control this material energy at the same time while we're being entrapped by it. Same thing. In other words, if you're entrapped by something, you're stuck within it, but at the same time you're trying to control it in order to get some satisfaction from that control. And so, according to the capacity to dominate material nature, this living entity gets a field of activity. And so, according to our desire, we get a particular type of body. The field of activity is the body, and what is this body? The body is made of senses. The conditioned soul wants to enjoy sense gratification, and according to his capacity to enjoy sense gratification, he is offered a body which is called the field of activity. So you get a particular body according to how the level of enjoyment for the material energy. Therefore, the body is called kshetra, or the field of activity for the conditioned souls. So this is where all our activity centers around, our particular body. Now, the person who should not identify himself with the body is called kshetrajna, or knower of the field. It is not very difficult to understand the difference between the field and its knower, the body and the knower of the body. So we are the knower and we have a body. Any person can consider that from childhood to old age he undergoes many changes of body, yet is still one person remaining. Okay. The field is changing, or developing, you might say. Not growing, but it's changing. Changing is a better word. And we are the same person, although our bodies are changing. Thus, there is a difference between the knower of the field and the actual field of activity. So now you can see yourself separate from your body. You know your body, and the body is changing, but you don't change. You're the same person who is witnessing all the different changes. Okay? Thus, there is a difference between the knower of the field of activities and the actual field of activities. A living, conditioned soul can thus understand that he is different from the body. It is described in the beginning, deho dehino smin, that the living entity is within the body and that the body is changing from childhood to boyhood, from boyhood to youth, and youth to old age. And the person who owns the body knows that the body is changing. This owner is distinctly called Kshetra Gya. Sometimes we think, I am happy, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a dog, I am a cat. These are all bodily designations of the knower. But the knower is different from the body. We don't say, I body, we say, my body, right? Although we may use many articles, our clothes, for example, we know that we are different from the things we use. Similarly, we should also understand by a little contemplation that we are different from the body. I or you or anyone else who owns the body is called Kshetra Gya, the knower of the field of activities, and the body is called Kshetra, the field of activities. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the knower of the body, the living entity, and the position by which he can understand the Supreme Lord are described. That's Karma Yoga. In the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord and the relationship between the individual soul and the super soul in regard to devotional service is described. That's bhakti. The superior position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the subordinate position of the individual soul are definitely defined in these chapters. We are always subordinate, and God is always in the superior position. The living entities are subordinate under all circumstances, but in their forgetfulness, they are suffering. So we don't see ourselves as being subordinate, therefore we struggle. When enlightened by pious activities, activities in the mode of goodness, they, living entities, approach the Supreme Lord in different capacities. We approach the Lord as being distressed, in want of money, being inquisitive, or in search of knowledge. This is also described. Now, starting with the 13th chapter, how the living entity comes in contact with the material nature, and how he is delivered by the Supreme through the different methods of fruitive activities, cultivation of knowledge, and the discharge of devotional service. So this is the three chapters. Fruitive activities, cultivation of knowledge, and discharge of devotional service. Again, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. Although the living entity is completely different from the material body, he somehow becomes related. This is also explained. So this verse, this discussion, or this question and answer response here, which sets the stage for the topic of the entire chapter, is now being mentioned here. Om Gyan Timidandasya Gena Jena Salakaya Chaksun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimakti Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Ani Pracharine Irvisesa sunyavadhi pastyatya dehi satarine vanchakalpa turuvisya paevacha patitanam pavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo namaho namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasiti Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this chapter is so important that one very senior devotee in our movement actually wrote a separate book called the 13th chapter. Maybe you come across that book. It's been out for at least 30 years or so. It's just Prabhupada's purport, but then he adds explanations to each and every verse, which expands the purports with greater and more detailed knowledge. So here, it sounds very technical, but when you come right down to it, it's very simple. We are different than our body. So who are we? Well, that'll be answered in this particular chapter. We are separate from the body. We are within the body, and we are the force that gives this body life, animation. There's that monster again. What is he eating? Must have had too much pizza last night. He's just suffering. So he thinks he's his body, therefore he ate too much pizza. So when we think we're the body, we're an illusion. We may not fully realize the distinction between ourselves and our body, but through the process of devotional service and cultivation of transcendental knowledge, along with the execution of the activities of devotional service, we can start to see and understand through practical realization that we are not this body, or we are different than this body. The body is like a tool. It is something we use to get things done. The body itself is a combination of the material energies made up of two combinations. One is the gross body and one is the subtle body. These two combinations of two different features of our material body make up our external identity. So we look in the mirror and we think, oh, that's me. But that's not you. That's your body. And that body has been given to you by material nature. You didn't choose the body you got, but at the same time you did choose. How is it we did choose and we didn't choose? Well, we chose by the activities of our previous life. We performed certain activities, and these activities built up to a certain result. And along with the desires that we perform the activities with, and the activities itself, we are formulating a particular body. Even in this life, we are cultivating, our spiritual body is developing right now within our consciousness. As we develop our devotion or service, our consciousness is being molded according to that development. And we're formulating our next body right now, every moment, according to our desires and according to our activities, both of these things. So the body we have now is simply a culmination of the body, of the activities and desires that have been continuous for many lives in the past. And now we have a particular body. So we may like the body we have, or we may not like the body we have. And some of us have that experience. Well, I like my body, I don't like my body. Just like you buy a car and sometimes you don't like it. But you bought it. Why is that noise going on? Huh? Construction work. That's not us?
Renovation.
Upstairs?
No, outer part of the
building. Devotees are doing that?
Yeah.
Why do they do it during class? All right, try not to be distracted by it. I'll speak a little bit louder so it kind of overshadows that sound. It's not like, you know, like the beautiful sound of the Maha Mantra, but anyway, try to be focused on it. So the body we have is really, in one sense, the desires that we've had developed, which have culminated in a particular body. And as we live our life in this life, we're actually developing our body accordingly. You see, people develop external physical features based on how they live their life. If a person is a meat eater, you'll see that they develop a certain facial nature, a certain way of talking, a certain way of acting. Same with a vegetarian. They'll develop a certain facial feature. And if a person is very greedy, that will come out in their physical development. Person is very lusty, that will also be developed. So the different qualities that we cultivate in our activities in life are also structuring and formulating the particular physical traits that we have in this life, like that. All of that is building up towards our next body in the next life. So as we cultivate devotional service, we are developing what is called spiritual consciousness. That consciousness is formulating our spiritual body, and if it reaches perfection in this life, then when we leave this world, we get a spiritual body according to that cultivation of consciousness. So in one sense, we are always in control of the direction by which we act and think, and accordingly we get a particular body and the characteristics that come with those body. So one should not blame anyone for the particular body you got. Why was I born in this particular family? Why is these two people my mother and father? Why is this particular country the place of my birth? All of these things are all part of a culmination of activities and desires which are formulating consciousness. And when consciousness manifests in the form of birth, it brings about a result of that collective consciousness, and that is called birth. That's called manifested karma, or a series of what we say smaller karmas then manifest into a large karma, and that's the body you get. So we have to understand that we are different than the body. We know that theoretically. Each and every devotee can say that, I'm not this body. To the level we understand that in realization is to the intensity by which we practice devotional service. The more we become absorbed in devotional service, the more we not only distance ourselves from the actions and reactions of the body, but at the same time we can see ourselves different from the body. This happens a lot in dreams. When we go to sleep at night, we actually separate ourselves from our physical body, and we enter into the state of the subtle body, which is the mind and the intelligence. And there in that dream state, we sometimes see ourselves within the dream as being different. In other words, we perceive ourselves in the dream according to what we know ourselves are and the waking consciousness, but then there appears to be two people, and both people are the same person. One is the one that's watching, and the other one is the one that's being watched. So when you watch yourself in the dream, who is actually watching? Well, that's the mind is actually watching the images that the mind has created in the sense of our identity on the physical level. So we're actually watching ourselves in the dream. We become two in a dream state like that. Sometimes it says that when we actually reach the spiritual level, the soul is the one that's actually watching the dreams within the mental state of the mind and the intelligence. So we get a little idea of the separation between the body and the soul in different phases of our life, especially dreaming is most prominent like that. There are people who have out-of-body experiences. We've seen that also. There's books written about people who leave their body and go to different places. This happens a lot during operations. Sometimes a person will be put into an operation theater, and they'll be given some anesthesia. But somehow they leave the body during the operation, and they actually watch the operation from a different point in the same room. That happens. People can actually see the operation. They're watching their own body being operated on. So the mind and the intelligence, which encases the soul, separates from the gross body in certain circumstances. Sometimes that happens when there is a very horrible experience. One separates themselves from the body because the pain of the body becomes so much that the mind separates itself from that. It so becomes almost automatic. You don't even plan that. It's just the horrendous experience that the body is going through. And the soul, taking the mind with it, separates itself from the physical experience that the body is going in under. And there's people who can, somehow just leave their body and come back. I have met devotees who have talked about experience of leaving their body, watching their body. There was one devotee in our movement, he said when he was a young boy, just very small, 3 or 4 years old, he would leave his body at will and float around the room and then come back like that. I'm sure, and I say this with all certainty, some of you maybe also had that experience of having an out-of-body experience. We have that. So these things kind of help us to understand that, yes, I am not this body. So that means that when I'm separate from the body here, as it's described, it's the field of activities. So this is where we work in this material world. We're working with this field of activity, which is known as my physical and mental body. And what do? We perform activities using the body. So therefore, Krishna explains that you are the knower of the field, and the field is called the body. And the object of knowledge is something else, which Krishna will explain in a later part of this chapter, and the goal of that knowledge also. So that gets... So this is a very philosophical chapter, just to see yourself different from the body. So sometimes the living entity is called the enjoyer of the field. So I was asked a question today. I was giving a class on my Zoom call this afternoon, and someone brought up the same question here. How can we call ourselves the enjoyer of the field when we know we are not the enjoyer? Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and we are this servant. But yet, we also have a principle of enjoyment that is the foundation for our existence. If there was no enjoyment in one's direction and activity, there will be no purpose to activity. We do things in order to find some pleasure, some happiness, some enjoyment. Why do we do that? Because it's our nature. Everyone wants happiness. Everyone wants enjoyment. But when we look towards a material energy to fulfill that need for enjoyment, we get something different. We don't always get enjoyment. We may get a little relief from the sufferings that come by way of having a material body. But real enjoyment is connected with the source of enjoyment, and that is the Supreme Lord Himself. So that's where real enjoyment is. But here, just for the sake of argument, and to give an understanding of the mentality of the living entity in the material world, we are known as the enjoyer of this field, which is called our body. So the living entity is always trying to enjoy the body like that. Of course, when you begin devotional service, now you don't try to enjoy the body, you try to use the body in the service of the Lord. And then the body becomes a friend rather than a struggle like that. So when the body is connected back to its source, because the body is made out of material elements, but these material elements in essence are spiritual, in the sense that earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, these are created by the Supreme Lord. No one can manufacture these things. No one can manufacture these things. Brahma is given these elements at the beginning of creation to formulate the bodies based on these eight elements. But these eight elements are created by Krishna directly. So in one sense, and in what we might say the absolute sense, they're spiritual. So when we use our material body, or our physical body and our mental body in the service of the Lord, we again bring it back to its true existence, that is, its spiritual nature. And you'll see, probably you may have heard of this one, Teresa of Avila. You've heard of her? Teresa of Avila from Portugal. When she died, her body didn't decompose. It stayed like that for years. In fact, that her body stayed just as bright and as effulgent as it was when she was alive. Although she was no longer present, her body had become fully spiritualized in her devotion to Lord Christ. That, of course, what they did later is that when they got her body, they cut it up into pieces, and everybody wanted a piece of that. Well, it ruined the whole thing. Yeah, but yeah. So I mean, they you know, somebody wanted a hand, and somebody wanted a foot. You know, it still was in good condition too, and it didn't deteriorate at all. And there's other examples of that too. I think if you go to Sri Rangam, you'll see that in the Sri Rangam temple, there is the deity of Ramanujacharya. It's his actual body kept in resin. And when you see it, you experience the presence of Ramanujacharya. It's so lifelike that the body of a highly developed soul actually doesn't deteriorate like a normal body does, because of the power of the spiritual force of devotion actually energizes the whole body, and the body actually becomes almost like pure spiritual energy like that. In other words, it retains its actual in. So this is just an example. Of course, there's not so many examples in the world like that, but there are others also of bodies not deteriorating due to the power of that soul's devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we get a little understanding from this discussion here that, yes, we are the enjoyer of the field, and the field is the body we've been particularly given. So now Krishna, this particular two verses sets the stage for the whole discussion of this chapter. And it gets really interesting. If you can get a hold of that book called the 13th chapter, you'll find it was done by Harikesh Maharaj. Huh? You have that book? Yeah, 13th chapter. It might be a good study for preparing for the classes on this 13th chapter. It's interesting. It's very philosophical, seems a little technical, but when you get it right down to it, it's easy to understand when you start knowing what of the terminologies refer to like that. Okay, and it's a nice discussion between Krishna and Arjuna in this particular chapter. Okay, so, and as this chapter is more philosophical than the previous chapters to help us to sharpen our intelligence, by applying intelligence to philosophical teachings, the mind becomes sharp. That's why when we read and hear, we should try to hear with complete attention and read with complete attention. As we do that, we will see that our intelligence gets activated in that attentive absorption in the philosophy, and we start understanding deeper the meanings of what is being said. And that's what makes this philosophy so amazing, because it's so deep in transcendental knowledge and varieties like that. Okay, so I'll stop there and see if there's any questions, comments on the Sundar Gopal.
Would you agree that this chapter is similar to this Uddhava Gita, to conversation between Krishna and Uddhava?
Yeah, very much, yeah. Well, the whole Uddhava Gita is the Bhagavad Gita taken on another level of knowledge, a higher level of knowledge. But there is much more gyan that Krishna explains in the 11th canto, which kind of brings out many of the points that he made in the Bhagavad Gita and takes it to a more complete and understanding. Yeah. Yeah, it's very similar.
So when you talked about that we are also small enjoyers, so I was thinking that, first I was thinking like that this is reason for conditioned state enjoyment.
Right. And for then, material enjoyment. Yeah.
Yes, yes. But then so is also suffering. When we suffer, we are also conditioned. No, it's hard to think about Krishna. And
yeah. Suffering is the nature of this material world. Enjoyment is not. Yeah.
But what would you say is this underneath reason for this conditioned state
of suffering
or enjoyment of both? Actually, it must be something else. No,
well, yeah,
subtle.
You can't
know.
Live in this world if it was complete suffering. So Krishna gives you a little bit of enjoyment, just so you can go on in this world and finally wake up to the reality that I don't belong here, that I don't want to suffer. My enjoyment in this world is so insignificant compared to this suffering that I have to undergo. So if there was complete suffering, nobody would, you know, do anything. They would just give up. Everyone would just die. If there was too much enjoyment, just like in the higher planets, there is, the demigods have a lot of enjoyment. And therefore, it's hard for them to actually become fully Krishna conscious, because they're diverted away by the luxurious atmosphere of the heavenly realms. And if you go into the lower realms of existence, in the lower planets, there's more suffering there. So the middle planets where we are, it is supposed to be a balance of happiness and distress, but more distress than happiness. In the higher planets, more happiness, and in the lower planets, almost complete distress. But somehow or other, even though there is these great dichotomies between happiness and distress, the living entity goes on, because the living entity's nature is to enjoy. So that enjoyment propensity is strong within the living entity. Nobody gets up in the morning and says, "Today I'm going to have a terrible day." Now everyone's thinking, okay, I'll go on with my activities, and either maybe it's more unconscious. We're always thinking we want to experience happiness, we want to experience enjoyment. So that is either conscious or less conscious, but it's always there within the living entity. The desire to feel pleasure, the desire to enjoy. It's just natural. Because that's our nature.
Yeah, no one wants to suffer.
No, one wants to suffer. But there are people who live a life of suffering and actually accept it as enjoyment. They actually take suffering as enjoyment. You know, they get so intoxicated, they're always suffering from that, but they think it's enjoyment. Or people, there are people who like to cause distress to others. And that's a form of suffering for that person who does that, but still, they accept it as enjoyment. So perception of happiness and distress or suffering and enjoyment is what it is perception. As they say, one man's food is another man's poison. That's a saying we use. So suffering, Krishna says in the ninth chapter, he says it twice, Dukkhalayam asasritam anitya asubham. This place is temporary and it's miserable. Why? And then he says why? Birth, death, disease, and old age. These are the four built-in sufferings that the living entity. So we understand, yes, disease is a form of suffering. If you haven't been old, you can see how old people are really marginalized in life. They can't really function. And they have to take so much help from so many things in order just to continue their existence. And they're almost like children again. They become so much incapacitated to do things. And then death is there. But we forget that birth is another form of suffering. To stay packed up in the womb for 9 months in this very airtight bag and having to undergo all of the miseries that come with that. There's little worms biting the baby in the womb. Sometimes the baby moves around and the mother is wondering why the baby is like that. The baby is suffering in the womb. But it goes on. And then after 9 months of that, and then it comes out. And then birth is a very miserable experience. Many women die at childbirth. There's a big statistic, how many women actually lose their life at childbirth. Sometimes they can't even deliver the baby, they have to cut the woman open in order to bring the baby out. So birth is not a nice thing. The men can't really understand it, but the women can really relate to it. They know. So that's another form of suffering, birth. So these four things are intrinsic within material existence. You can't get rid of these four. Birth, death, disease, and old age. They've been trying to cure diseases for the beginning of time. They cure one disease and two more diseases come up, right? Disease will always be here. It's just the way it is. It's the material world. So yeah, that's why Krishna says, you know, Dukkhalayam asasritam. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu. What is your name?
Kavi Kanapura Das.
Kavi Kanapur.
Yes.
Nice. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. You mentioned that material elements are actually spiritual. Because they were created directly from Krishna.
Yeah.
So does this means that they have consciousness also? I'm asking this because we say, oh, you mentioned mind is seeing in the dream. Mind is seeing, mind is watching. And sometimes we say, oh, mind is talking, mind is speaking. And so I thought that this only living entities can do, but I thought that material element cannot talk, material element cannot see, But today you said that they are spiritual, so does this mean that they have consciousness and they can see and they can talk?
On the spiritual platform, they have full consciousness. When they come to the material world, they take on the consciousness of the body that they're in. It's like there are millions of souls in your body, not just you. You're just one. You're the main one. You're the directing one. You're the CEO soul.
Oh, my question was, is mind itself, it speaks by itself, or does somebody else speak through our mind?
It could be both. Sometimes people are haunted by ghosts, so the ghosts are actually working through the mind of that individual. But the mind is speaking about the desires and anxieties that it's going through, and it reflects it on a mental level. That's all. So the voice of the mind can be very loud, and that's the voice of material desires. That's all. Yeah. If you put yourself in a very quiet atmosphere, like I remember, I went to a place in Ireland, it's called Inishrath, and it's so quiet there. And then all of a sudden I heard my mind, it was just loud. So as soon as you go into a quiet place, you can hear your mind even more.
My question is, was this your mind, or was maybe some ghost or somebody, subtle creature?
Yeah, it could be both. It could be for people who take intoxication, have a lot of illicit sex, then they're more or less haunted by ghosts. But for those who are not haunted by ghosts, it's just the ramblings of the restless mind, that's all.
Because in Bhagavad Gita it is said that Maya sits in the mind also.
Yeah.
So Maya. Is it Maya speaking through the mind, or who is actually speaking through the mind?
Well, it could be Krishna too. It depends on where you put your mind. If you put your mind connected with spiritual topics, then you're getting the voice of the spiritual masters or Krishna. If you're putting your mind on material things, then it's Maya, yeah. There are many voices, not just one. Many kinds of voices also. So the idea is to distinguish which voice is beneficial and which voice is just a waste of time. So.
And another short question. You mentioned
Did you get that one?
Sorry?
Did you get that answer?
Yeah. Okay, kind of, but we are running out of time, so
It's important to understand that these voices in your mind is the voices of the material desires, that's all. Or it's the voices of Krishna coming from the soul.
Or voices of Maya, or voices of ghosts.
Yeah, voices of Maya and ghosts are also same category, they're material. But there is another voice, the voice of Super Soul. That's the voice you want to connect with. And how do you connect with that? When you connect with the instructions of the spiritual master, then you connect with the voice of Krishna within the heart. And then when you become elevated, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says here, I'll even read the verse here. It's one of the more important verses. Krishna says, for one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. For such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor is all the same. So when the mind is fully controlled, then you're in connection with super soul. That means fixed in Krishna consciousness. That's what it means. Then you're getting the voice of God coming through the mind. But it's not the loud voice, it's a soft, sweet voice. The loud voice is the false ego. This is a very important point to understand, because our mind's always telling us what to do. So is it Krishna or is it Maya? So we have to know the difference.
can be Krishna, it can be Maya or our own desires, you said.
Well, if it's material desires, it's Maya. If it's spiritual desires, it's Krishna. There's only two categories, spiritual and material. Maya, ghosts, your own desire, material desires all fit into the category of material. But Krishna's there. He's talking to you now. Can you hear him? He's talking to each one of us all the time, constantly. He's telling you how you should be living your life, what you should be doing. He doesn't give up. He constantly speaks. And as soon as we control the mind, then all of a sudden we can connect with Krishna. Then the voice of what is called the spiritual intelligence comes through. And therefore, one on a higher platform, they don't really have to hear so much externally because they're hearing everything internally. Because they already purified their consciousness.
While you're speaking about the consciousness, you mentioned that desires formulate the consciousness. But I thought it's quite opposite, that consciousness formulates the desires.
Both. Desire formulates consciousness, and consciousness formulates desires. It keeps going one after another. They support each other, or they feed each other constantly. The more you desire, the more your consciousness is fed by that desire, and the more that consciousness is fed by that desire, and the more consciousness will desire in a certain way. Can't separate them. Because desire is the living entity's existence. If you have one thing that's you, that is distinct from everything else, it's desire. That's why Krishna doesn't interfere with your desire, but he tries to direct you in the right way. You always have your desire.
I think that I read somewhere that it's the symptom of the soul, desire.
Yeah. When you see desire, you know there's a soul there. If you see a little ant on the ground, you put your finger in front of the ant will try to go around your finger. Because he's a living being. He desires not to be stopped. Yeah. Desire is life. Okay. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. I have just one question regarding that you said birth is manifested karma. Can you translate, please? Poznam eno zgodbo, ko so prišli modreci do enega velikega učitelja.
Sages came to a teacher. Yeah.
Yes. And in eden od njih je bil že zelo star, ne, in je vedel, da se mu smrt bliža. In je rekel, prosim te, podaljšaj mi življenje, zato ker še moramo veliko narediti. Ja. In ta mu je rekel, da ne more, da bo umr, ne? In on ga res prosim, podaljšaj mi. In potem je rekel, vidiš tistega jogija tam, bo šel v njegovo telo. Hočeš iti v to telo? In potem je rekel, ja, in ta starec je tam umrl in šel v to telo jogija.
Mm-hmm.
Je, pač razmišljala sem o teh reinkarnacijah, oziroma, če mi umremo na spiritualnem levelu, in smo zavestni tega, pač zamenjave telesa, ja, a je to v šastrah potrjeno?
Yeah, there is. There's an example of Judd Bart, who was Bart Maharaj in a previous life. But he got attached to a deer. And when he died, he was thinking of the deer. But because he was such a great devotee, when he received the body of a deer in his next life, he remembered everything of his previous life. And he also knew that he was in the body of a deer. And in order to get the benefit, he didn't associate with other animals. He used to go around and just listen to the sages speak. So when he gave up that body, he actually became a great soul in the next life. And that was Judd Bart. So he was always aware, even when he was in the deer body, of why he was in that body and who he was in his last life. Yeah. So that's an example of a very developed soul. Krishna also gave him that special mercy so he could remember and then he could get out of that body and then perfect his next life and go back to Godhead, which he did.
So we can say this reincarnation. In kaj se pod, kaj pa potem recimo, če razmišljamo naprej glede jogija, ne, tega jogija, a je ta jogi najbrž ni umr, ne, on je verjetno imel realizacijo, da je neka duša prišla.
The word carnation comes from the word carne. Carne in Latin means body. In the Latin word carne means body, so means to re-enter into a body. That's what it means, reincarnation. Yeah.
She's asking a question, if this yogi that was the present, was he aware that some new soul came into the
If he's a developed yogi, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There can be many souls in one body. We have examples of great souls in our movement, in our tradition, two or three souls are one particular body.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Da eno vprašanje, malo za šalo, malo za res, za vas, Maharaj, hvala lepa za lekcijo. Jaz sem prešla k prijateljem, prebujem, da so nehali vrtati. In če imate mogoče danes tudi Maha prasadem sabo, da bi se jim nekako odkupila, ker sta res nehala vrtati.
Pockets are empty. You should have told me. I would have been all ready. But since they stopped, they'll probably go to sleep.
Vegans,
okay. Yeah, I would have brought milk sweets, so that would never worked. So you're very compassionate. Thank you. I think if anybody else would have went, it wouldn't have happened.
This is Mataji's power.
Yeah. The power of a woman. Yeah.
Krishna mercy.
Power of a woman. No, nothing but Krishna's mercy. Well, the power of a woman is Krishna's mercy also. Yeah. They say behind every successful man, there's a woman. So the devotees asked Prabhupada one time, well, if that's true, then what about brahmacharis? Prabhupada said, Radharani's there. Same with sannyasis. All right, so speaking of prasadam, we can end the class here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.